So the rest of America is observing what they call Super Sunday, watching a bunch of football players running after each other in a field. Thank you very much for electing to come to the Super Sunday Love Feast instead. This goes on every Sunday, and it's super. It's a super program. And the results are super. We're going to discuss that a little bit. As you know, our tradition is every Sunday morning we present a recorded lecture of the founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And so this morning Srila Prabhupada was speaking from the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing in that section the life of Maharaj Parikshit. How, as a child, Krishna Kridan, he was playing with Krishna dolls. So Prabhupada mentioned there, and it's pretty obvious, that there are opportunities there for all Krishna conscious parents. Those who are already parents, those who are about to become parents, or those who are planning to be parents, you are being given the opportunity to raise Krishna conscious offspring, which the world is in dire need of. All the miseries of this world are actually people inflicting miseries on each other. That's the majority of it. The weather we can deal with or not, we realize that that's beyond our control. But there's nothing more miserable than when somebody else inflicts miserable conditions on you. And amongst those that inflict miserable conditions on you, the worst is when your own family members, it's mentioned in the scriptures, that there's nothing worse than being insulted by a family member. Somebody you think is your own people. These are my people. And they treat me like this. Right, isn't it? It burns to the heart. This was discussed in the pastime of Lord Shiva and Sati when she wanted to go to see her father, Daksha. And he didn't want her to go because he knew what was going to happen. And so he explained there that there's nothing worse than being insulted by a family member. So the world is in dire need of high-class people. Now, in the modern parlance, high class is taken to mean that you have money in the bank. If you have money, then you're high class. If you don't have money, then you're low class. But that's not the way the scriptures see it. Class is the stratification of higher or lower class is dependent on the quality of your personality, your consciousness, the quality of your consciousness. That's what determines whether you're high class or not high class. It's not whether you're wearing, you know, Gucci or Fendi or any of these big name brands. That doesn't make you high class. Anybody can go to a store and buy that. Or steal them, which many people do. They're so infatuated with these brand names that somehow or other, by hook or crook, they get them. If they can't afford to buy it, then they steal it. Now, nowadays it's very popular to steal eye devices. I just read a report recently. They said that if not for the theft of eye devices, the crime rate in New York would be like 15% lower than the previous year. But so many people get their eye devices stolen that it drives up the crime rate. Because people are mad. They think if I don't have an iPhone, then I'm not somebody. I have to have an iPhone. I can't just have an Android phone or something like that. So people are crazy. Everybody's so materialistic and they will do anything to satisfy their material desires. And this is what makes the quality of life so miserable. So one of the prime takeaways from the Krishna conscious presentation, the path of Krishna consciousness, is to be satisfied with whatever comes naturally in your life. Satisfaction. To be satisfied. Because one sees that we're always under the control of higher authority. And in spite of all our endeavors, we may not get what we want. And if we develop this mentality of getting it anyway, just in that same report I mentioned from New York, there was a very funny case. A young girl, teenager, 15, 16, was walking through a park. And it's close to me because I was raised near to that park. I was born in Jamaica, but grew up in New York City, near to this park, Prospect Park. So this girl, teenager, she's walking through the park with her iPhone. And she's got her headsets on, so she doesn't realize what's going on. And before she knows it, two guys come, and they accost her, and they rip the iPhone away from her. But she was conscious enough to note how one of them was dressed. And he was wearing pink sneakers. Anyway, so he takes off with the phone, and he's going down a few blocks away. There were a bunch of teenage boys that did that. And an older man accosted him and stole the phone from him. So he saw a police car nearby, stopped the police car, and he chased the guy down and caught him just a few blocks away. Took him to the police station. Meanwhile, the girl whose phone was originally stolen, she was with another bunch of cops, and she got the bright idea to dial her phone from one of the cops' phones. And the phone, meanwhile, was at the police station. So one of the policemen answered the phone. And she said, "My phone is stolen." And he said, "Well, we haven't." So, meanwhile, the kid who stole it and the guy who stole it from him, they're both at the same police station. So she comes there. Make a long story short, they both wound up in jail. The teenager who stole the phone originally, because when she came, he said, "No, she's lying. It's my phone." So the cop said, "Okay, here's the phone. Unlock it." And he couldn't. And they gave it to her, and she could unlock it. So they realized she was telling the truth. So the boy who stole the phone was thrown in jail, and the man who stole the phone from him, he was also thrown in jail. So this is how crazy people are. Over a little insignificant item like a phone, they'll risk spending, you know, hard time in jail. So the world is in dire need of high-class population. High-class means those whose character are of a high standard. Not how much money they have in the bank, not what kind of phone they use, not what kind of car they drive. I mean, I've told this story many times, but I'll tell it again because there are a lot of parents here. How many of you here are parents? Yes, quite a few. When I was used to be in the Potomac Temple, just like we have our Sunday Feast program here, every Sunday, you know, and it's mostly Indians in that community, so these Indian families would come, and we would serve the feast outside, and when the weather was nice, and so there's this one man in particular, Indian gentleman, who would stand right next to me, and we would chat while we were serving the prasadam. So one Sunday, I noticed he was very down, so I asked him, I said, "What's going on? Why are you so morose today?" And I said, no, tell me. So it turns out his oldest son had just graduated high school, was going to go on to college. And as a graduation present, he bought the boy a car. But the boy was not satisfied. And he asked his son, it's a brand new car. The son said, "How do you expect me to drive a Toyota to college when all my friends are driving BMWs?" This is materialistic civilization. A 19-year-old boy, 18-year-old boy is not satisfied to have a brand new Toyota. It has to be a BMW. Otherwise, he's not satisfied. So this is craziness. This is craziness. This is what goes on. In my day, if you got a 30-year-old pickup truck as your first car, you were happy. You were satisfied. So learning to be satisfied with whatever comes naturally will save your consciousness. Forget about the effect it has on other people. It will have a very positive effect on you as an individual. Your stomach acid will stay down. You won't get so many headaches. Your envy, most of all, will come down. Because all of this craziness is fueled by envy, which is one of the six enemies of the soul. When we come into the material world, we have six enemies. And we're not talking about the Muslims or Jews or... No. Our six enemies are... stated in the scriptures, lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, and madness. So we have to be taught how to curb these enemies, how to keep them in check, how to keep them far away from us, as far away as possible. And this is one of the benefits of this Krishna conscious process. So Prabhupada is pointing out this morning that Maharaj Pariksit, being a great soul, he was born into the imperial Kuru family, specifically in the Pandava family, and he never had a chance from birth to forget Krishna. This is the hallmark of the Nitya Siddha, or Mahabhagavata devotees. When they come into this material world, they're here for a purpose, and they are never given a chance to forget Krishna. So from his birth, he was playing with Krishna dolls. And Prabhupada explained that he himself, and I'm going to read just this one Bhagavad Gita purport where Prabhupada mentions this also. He himself was given the same opportunity along with his spiritual master. And so in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada mentions this in one verse. Let's see, I think it's 642, yes. Light here is kind of bad. So Krishna says, Atava yoginam eva kule bhavati timatam eta di durlaba taram loke janma yad idrisham. Prabhupada translates, or if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. Because in the previous verse, Krishna is speaking about if you fall away from the yoga process after a short time, first you go to the heavenly planets to enjoy, and then you come back to this earth planet, and you take birth in a family of brahmanas or wealthy family like that to be given an opportunity to continue. But if you fall down after a very long time of practice, then you take birth in a family of transcendentalists. So Prabhupada mentions in his purport, birth in a family of yogis or transcendentalists, those with great wisdom, is praised herein, because the child born in such a family receives a spiritual impetus from the very beginning of his life. It is especially the case in the Acharya or Goswami families. Such families are very learned and devoted by tradition and training, and thus they become spiritual masters. In India, there are many such Acharya families, but they have now degenerated due to insufficient education and training. By the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalists generation after generation. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families. By the grace of the Lord, and both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our lives. Later on, we met by the order of the transcendental system. So this is the opportunity that's being given to children, just like recently we had a birth in a community, Paravida Mataji and, what's his name? Rajavidya and Paravidya. They had a daughter that they named Gopi Gita. So I wrote them congratulatory email and I said, now you have the opportunity to sing Gopi Gita to Gopi Gita. Gopi Gita, those of you who know, that's a specific section of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto. The gopis are singing Krishna's praises. That's called the Gopi Gita, just like we have Bhagavad Gita, song of God, Bhagavan. We have the Gopi Gita, the song of the gopis. So I told him, now you have opportunity to sing Gopi Gita to Gopi Gita. So that opportunity is there for those who are already parents, those who are about to become parents or would like to become parents. Take the opportunity to try to make, you best you can just try your best. There's no guarantee that they're going to turn out this way or that way. But it is your responsibility to try your best to make your offspring Krishna conscious. And you're doing the world a very great favor, and you're also doing yourself a great favor, because we know the more you teach something, the more you learn yourself. So if you're making a habit to instruct someone in Bhagavad Gita, that means you are learning Bhagavad Gita. And if you're an honest soul, then you're not going to ask your children to do things that you're not doing yourself. That's like Prabhupada tells the story of the mother who took her son to see a doctor. And while they were at the doctor, she said to the doctor, please, my son eats too many sweets. And they eat a lot of sweets. And she said, can you please tell him that it's not good to stop eating sweets? So the doctor said something that was baffling to the mother at that point. He said, come back in 2 weeks. So she didn't understand. She said, okay. So after 2 weeks, she brought her son back to the doctor. And the doctor told him, don't eat sweets. So the mother asked, why couldn't you tell him that 2 weeks ago? He said, because I was eating sweets. So if you're honest, you're not going to tell the children to do something that you're doing, not doing like that, or not do something that you're doing. So we have to be honest parents. Not do as I say, not as I do. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. Especially nowadays when you can't punish the kids anymore. In the days when you could punish the kids, that used to work. The father would smoke, but if he caught the son smoking, he would smack him. But that doesn't work anymore. You can't smack the kids anymore. So if you don't want them to smoke, you can't be a smoker. If you don't want them to drink, you can't be a drinker. You have to live the kind of life that you want your children to lead. And then you have some chance of success. So the Krishna consciousness movement is so very nice. Prabhupada is explaining, and we experience that from the beginning of life. Like, we have so many young children that come, practically on a daily basis, they come to the temple, and they imitate. During the Guru Puja, the adults are offering flowers to Prabhupada, so they offer flowers to Prabhupada. Adults are jumping up and down ecstatically, so they jump up and down. And Prabhupada used to remind us, don't think that this jumping up and down in front of the deity is something ordinary. No, it's not. Even if the person who's doing it is not conscious that they're making spiritual advancement, they are making spiritual advancement, because Krishna notices. He would always remind us, Krishna's not just standing there. He's very active. He's watching everything that we do. He knows everything that we're thinking. One time Prabhupada said that in Vrindavan. He said, you see Krishna holding the flute like you see the Orkadishir's gun. Two fingers up like this. He said, these two fingers can see what you're thinking. Krishna is not ordinary. He's a supreme being. So anybody who comes, knowingly or unknowingly, before the deities, and they bow down, or they chant, or they dance, take prasadam, whatever, anything you do in Krishna consciousness, it is like transcendental poison. It's like if somebody gives you poison unknowingly, it's still going to act, whether you knew that you were poisoned or not. It's going to act. There's a verse in the sixth canto. This is Yamaraj speaking to the Yamadutas, because the Yamadutas tried to arrest Ajamil, and they couldn't. The Vishnudutas stopped them, so they were confused. They went back to Yamaraj and said, nobody's ever stopped us before from arresting a sinful person, and this guy was very sinful. But so Yamaraj explained, you don't understand, he chanted the holy name. So he explained, Agyanad Atava Agyanad Uttama Shloka Namayan Sankirtatim Agang Pungso Dahed Edu Yatanala. He says, just as a fire can consume any amount of fuel that you put into it, similarly, just once chanting the holy name of the Lord destroys more sins than the practitioner can commit. Whether they know it or not. Agyanad Atava Gyana. Gyana means knowledge. So agyana means no knowledge. Whether you know it or not, if you chant Uttama Shloka, the name Uttama Shloka is the name of Krishna. Prabhupada explained that word actually today in his class. Uttama Shloka is the name of Krishna, which means he's glorified with the best of songs, best of shlokas. So Agyanad Atava Gyana Uttama Shloka Namayat, the name of Krishna or any of those other names, has the potency to destroy the reactions to more sins than we can commit. But that doesn't mean that now we have a license to go out and commit sin and then chant. That's one of the offenses against the holy name, the seventh offense. Nam no balad yasahi papa budhi. That if you chant and then you go out and commit sin, it's not acceptable. What we should understand is that we're being given an opportunity, this chanting process, to make very, very rapid progress spiritually. Your material situation may or may not change. That's not what this is about. If we were the kind of society that guaranteed that you become a member and you will make $100,000 a year minimum, this place would be packed. But that's not what this is about. Everybody has their individual karma on the material side of the coin. We can never be equal materially. It's not possible. We don't look alike. We're not all the same height. We don't have all the same bodily strength. We can't all run at the same speed. Materially, you can never make society equal. It's just not possible. It's not possible. And even, all of those things aside, but what about finances? Why can't we be equal financially? No, it doesn't happen. The classic example, again, is if I gave everybody in the room right now $10 million, and in a year from now, we all got together, would everybody still have 10 million? Some people would have nothing, because as soon as they got the 10 million, they would run to Vegas and blow it all. That's just their foolish mentality. And somebody else would invest it wisely and have three times as much. And most of us would probably be somewhere in the middle. So that's how karma works. That's how it works. Materially, you can never be equal. But spiritually, we can all achieve the same goal if we stick to the very simple process that's been given us by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This chanting process, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reminds us, and for those who don't come so often, if you look up at the ceiling, you'll see different paintings depicting different pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he reminded us that this chanting is extremely effective in cleansing the mirror of the heart. The heart, because we're materially contaminated, is contaminated. It's contaminated with those six enemies that I mentioned earlier. First of all, being lust. One who's not pure-hearted is naturally lusty. Lusting after sense gratification in any way, shape, or form. And when that attempt to gratify the senses is inevitably frustrated, then anger comes. One becomes angry. And anger is extremely difficult to control. If we allow our psyche, our consciousness, to become contaminated with anger on a regular basis, then practically you don't know what you'll do. And we see so many examples in society. People become angry and they do all kinds of horrible things. Practically at every moment, something horrible is happening. Sometimes we lose track of what a heavy society we're living in terms of the pain that people inflict on each other. Just another statistic I saw recently. There's so many hit and run accidents here in Los Angeles that practically every single minute of every single day, somebody's getting hit by a car. And a lot of them result in death. That's the kind of world that we're living in right now. You can't even cross the street safely because of some crazy person, mad about something, probably mad at someone, not paying attention, and they hit you. Practically every minute of every day, somebody, and just this is LA, I'm not talking about the entire United States, just Los Angeles City, almost every minute of every day, somebody gets hit by a hit-and-run driver. So the atmosphere that we're living in is very, very heavy. Now, those who are hearing from the Shastras regularly, we're not surprised. We know why. This is the Kali Yuga. And Kali Yuga is that age in which all good qualities gradually diminish. All good qualities practically diminish. This is also mentioned in the scripture. Everything is there in the scripture. The scriptures that we're following anyway. We can't speak about anybody else's scriptures, but the scriptures that we follow, headed by Bhagavad Gita, and then you graduate to the Srimad Bhagavatam, it predicts all of this. Because the ages, they rotate cyclically, just like the seasons, just like summer is followed by fall, by winter, by spring, and then summer again. The ages rotate. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and then Kali Yuga, and then again Satya Yuga. So we're in the Kali Yuga right now, and which is the worst of the four ages in terms of the quality of life, duration of life. Very, very bad. Duration of life, very short. You're lucky. If you live to be 70, 80, you're lucky nowadays. And when you think of it, that's nothing. That's nothing. 7 times 10, any child can tell you. What is 7 times 10? Yeah, 70, you know. So 7 times 10 is really nothing. But if you get to be 70, it's like, ooh, you're getting to be a nice ripe old age. That's nothing. It's practically nothing. So we're seeing already that in this age, it says the maximum duration of life is about 100 years. But we see people not even making that. My mother is 83 years old. Already considered to be very old. That's not. 8 times 10. Nothing. But that's how it is. It seems if you make it to 80, you're like, wow, wonderful, great. No, it's not. But we are lulled into this kind of consciousness. Actually, we're all the same age. We're all eternal. It's just superficially somebody's 10, 12, somebody else is 25, somebody's 85, 95, whatever. That's superficial. That's the age of the body. But the soul within the body is eternal. And this is the understanding this simple fact is the impetus for getting into and continuing with vigor spiritual life. The more we appreciate this, that we're eternal beings, we're not these material bodies, the more we have impetus to practice spiritual life and make progress in cleansing our hearts and qualifying ourselves to go back to Godhead. Otherwise, we become caught up just like everybody else on the material platform, thinking that we're old, young, fat, thin, white, black, Indian, American. We're none of these things. These are all just temporary designations. Later on, the mother's going to remind these boys things they were doing when they were this age. They're going to forget. By the time they get to be 30, 40, they'll remember what they said, some things at 6, 7. But the mother remembers. So, the body's always changing. The body's always changing. So which body are you? Are they this body? Or the 30-year body? Or the body they're going to be 40 years from now? Which body are you? Which body are you? The body you were 20 years ago or this body? No, you're never this body. You're never this body. The body's always changing. And because we identify with this transitory shell that we're living in, we have ups and downs of consciousness. Ah, something's wrong with me. Nothing's wrong with you. It's just the body. Just like when something is wrong with your car, you just fix it and go on. Or you give it up and get a new car. So it's the same thing with the car of the body. When something is wrong with it, you fix it. And if it can't be fixed anymore, you'll get a new one. Now, what kind of new car? That's what we're working towards. We want to revive our eternal spiritual body and not have to take another temporary material model. Because it doesn't matter where it's manufactured, whether the body is manufactured in America or India or Russia or China. Nowadays, they have birth tourism. You may have heard of that. That's another big thing in the news. Because foreigners know that if your baby is born in America, then you're automatically an American citizen. So a lot of foreigners, most of them coming from China, it's a big source of this, they wait until the last moment woman is pregnant, and then they get on a plane, and they come to America. Because it's such a big deal where the child is born. But actually, in the long run, it doesn't matter. Wherever you take birth, there are going to be four companions after birth, or three after birth. After birth, there is disease, old age, and eventually death. And that's true whether you're in India, America, China, Costa Rica. It doesn't matter where you come from. The end result is going to be the same. What is changeable and what we can fix is the consciousness in which we leave this particular body. And that's what Krishna consciousness is all about. How to train the consciousness so that we are Krishna conscious at that last moment. At that last moment, that we are conscious of Krishna. How can we not be conscious of Krishna? That is Maya. That is illusion. And that Maya is one of Krishna's energies. It's just like if you were invited into the mansion of some big, big, let's say Bill Gates, because everybody knows his name. Let's say you got an invitation to Bill Gates. Every moment that you were there, you'll be conscious of Bill Gates. That's just the nature. It's his house, it's his mansion, his yard, his swimming pool, his chauffeur, his dogs, everything Bill Gates. You will be completely conscious of Bill Gates at every moment. So how can we not be conscious of God, of Krishna? Everything that we're looking at belongs to God. Everything. This planet, the entire universe, every one of the bodies in this room, every material manifestation, everything belongs to Krishna, to God. But still, we are not God conscious. We're God unconscious most of the time, if we're honest. So this is what needs to be changed. The more we can put ourselves in God consciousness, just like being in Bill Gates' house. If you were to forget that it's Bill Gates' house and you start ordering your servants around, bring me this, bring the car, I'm going to go. They would look at you crazy. You're not. You're not the boss. Everything here belongs to Bill. Wise up, otherwise we'll throw you out. Like that. So it's the same thing being in the world at large. If we're not conscious that everything belongs to God, then we're crazy. And we start thinking, I'm going to take this for myself and I'm going to give this to my friend. It doesn't belong to you. You can't really give it to anybody. Nothing belongs to you. Everything belongs to Krishna. And I use this example a lot. Mothers know that when the child is born, they're naturally acquisitive. They want to acquire everything for themselves. Anything that comes near them is mine, mine. And the mother usually is the one who has to teach them. No, share with your brothers, share with your family, share with the neighbors, share. Go on extending that sharing spirit until you come back to God. Then you realize that you really don't have anything to share. It's really His in the first place. And all you can do is ask, but not in the mood of ordering. This is another mistake that we make. Okay, we believe in God. Everything belongs to God. So practically order God. Okay, God, this is my list. I want this, I want that, I want that. And then when it doesn't come, then I don't believe in you anymore. What kind of God are you anyway? You can't give me what I ask for. I just ask for a simple thing, like a job. I can't get a job. What kind of God are you? You can't find a job for me. So it's not like that. We should not approach God in that mood of ordering God to do things, and if he doesn't do it, then we don't like him anymore. No, not like that. God has given us the intelligence to take care of ourselves. He's given us instruction how to take care of ourselves. We're the ones who don't do it. We mismanage things, and that's why there's so much problem in the world. There's a nice funny story about that, how in this town, like we have experienced here in the United States many times, many parts of the country, there's flooding. So when the water rose up to the front step, the police were going around in, you know, SUVs warning everybody, come, get out of here. Water's rising. And this one man, everybody was heeding the warning, but this one, no, God will take care of me. So then the water went up to the roof. He had to go up to his attic. And then the boats came by, hey, come. It's getting serious. No, God will take care of me. So then he went up to the top of the roof, and the waters came up and up, and then finally drowned. So then he went to God, and he saw God, and God, he said, why didn't you save me? He said, I sent a truck. I sent a boat. I sent a helicopter. So it's our foolishness. And then we blame God. So God has given intelligence. You know, taking care of yourself means something to eat, someplace to sleep. Not, doesn't take PhD. God has given us enough intelligence to take care of the basics of life. What we don't want and what we should be seeking is the intelligence to become more and more Krishna conscious. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, I'll give you that intelligence. Just serve me, worship me constantly, and I will give you the intelligence by which you can come to me. But that intelligence we don't seek. We want intelligence how to get more money, more money, more money, money. We're living in a cash-based economy, so everybody's just mad after money, 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 money. As if money is going to save us from death. It will not. Every wealthy person in the past has died. All the people that are wealthy today will die. All the wealthy people in the future will die. Money will not save you from death. As a matter of fact, as we know, generally speaking, those who have money have a greater tendency of being rotten than those who don't. Quite often that's the case. They think they can get away with anything, up to and including murder, because they have money. That may be true in the eyes of the common people or even in law. You can buy your way out of sticky situations, but you can't bribe Krishna. You can't bribe God. So whatever reactions are due to you will be there. Wealth can be used properly. Prabhupada also mentioned that this morning. Specifically, he was mentioning one Indian family. He was mentioning how previously all the wealthy Indian families, they had temples at home and they worshiped God. But he said in this one particular family, wealthy family, they had a home temple, and the mother was the head of the family. So she made a rule that every family member, no matter how young or old, they had to come to the temple every day, otherwise they would be fined. And it was the job of the priest to deliver the fine. So if one family member didn't come, the priest would come and say, sir, you didn't come to the temple today, so you have to pay a fine, 5 rupees, whatever. So Prabhupada said, we should institute that in our Krishna consciousness movement also. If you miss Mangal Arati, you'll be fine. And the fine is you have to distribute one Bhagavad Gita. So we should take it seriously. Every day is an opportunity to come closer and closer to Krishna. And it's not that difficult to do. Just come to the temple, chant Hare Krishna, bow down in front of the Krishna says, Manmana, Bhavamad Bhakta, Madhyaji, Mam Namaskaru. These four things. Manmana, think of me. And how to think of Krishna? The more we hear from Krishna about himself by hearing Bhagavad Gita, and the more we hear about Krishna from the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures, then we think naturally more and more about Krishna. And as we become more Krishna conscious, we see Krishna's control in our lives. So it encourages us to become more Krishna conscious. We come to the temple, we bow down in front of the deity, we take Krishna prasadam, we associate with each other. Now that association should extend to practical matters also. Not just we come together in the temple, we jump up and down, dance, and we ignore each other away from the temple. No. It's meant to be community. It's meant to be community. A Krishna conscious community. How wonderful it is, or wouldn't it be, if you could work with all Krishna conscious people. Never have to work. Just like recently, our Govinda Maharaj gave a class, and he was explaining about Bhaktivedanta Hospital because he spent some time there. How is such a nice hospital? Everybody there, from the floor sweeper to the biggest doctor, they all have to come twice a day and chant in front of Prabhupada's murti. They have a murti like this of Prabhupada at the hospital. This is in Mumbai. And everybody who works in the hospital, they have to come, unless they're involved in some emergency case, they have to come in front of Prabhupada and chant, Hare Krishna, and chant so many mantras nicely every day. Very nice to work in such an atmosphere. So those of you who are coming in this community, you should help each other. Just like I know for a fact, there are some members of our community who are out of work right now, they're looking. So everybody who has facility to hire, you should hire first of all amongst the Krishna conscious people. If you're running a company, wouldn't you want to have all devotees there? Very nice. Yes. Can I get a Haribol on that? Haribol. Yes, it'd be nice. If you come to the temple, you're with devotees. You go to work, you're with devotees. You go out to play tennis or whatever you do, you play with devotees. And recreation has to be there also. Krishna says, one must become regulated in eating, sleeping, and recreation. Recreation is not denied. But wouldn't it be nice if the people that you're having your recreation with, you go for a hike with devotees, or you go for a swim with devotees, everywhere devotees. So we should keep that in mind, please. We're establishing a community here, not just a community of jumping up and down in front of the deities, but practically also. Like I know for a fact, it's tax season, and some of our members are tax preparers. You probably want to hire a few people, hire amongst the devotees. Any kind of business that you're running, or you want to start a business, and you're looking for partners, look amongst the devotees. You know, why try to crowdsource from strangers? Come first to the devotees. So in this way, we form a very tight community where everybody's looking out for each other on every level, not just on the spiritual level, but on the practical level also. Because if one's practical needs are not taken care of, one will be distracted from the simple practices of Krishna consciousness. If you're always worried about what to eat next or where to sleep, it distracts you from Krishna consciousness. So those who have the means should help others. And amongst the young ones coming up, like I push these, we have so many IT experts on this block, what to speak of in the community at large. I keep telling them, why work for IBM or Department of Water and Power, wherever you work? Get together and make a company. Just on this block alone, there's enough IT power to make a very powerful company. So like that, we should think in terms of growing the community on all levels. Again, so many kids are being born. Parvati and Rajavati just had a child, and so many kids were born recently in the community. Form a Gurukula. Don't even think about sending them outside to school in their first formative years. Worst thing you can do. These kids should not be hanging out, because by the time they're 5, 6, these other kids, I'm sorry to say, they're already totally contaminated. They're eating meat. They're already into all kinds of bad things. So for the first, at least the first 5 through 10, if you can keep the children together in a Krishna conscious schooling atmosphere, so wonderful for them, so nice. So the parents have to take the lead on this. You cannot expect that Suvas, as the temple president, is going to necessarily take the lead on that. Those who are parents should get together and put their heads together. How can we protect our children, protect their consciousness, so that eventually when they have to go out in the world, at least they'll have a very solid foundation. It's extremely important. And I'll end with this little story. It's a true story. When I was in Alachua, I was told this directly. That one young man, he had been born into the ISKCON movement, Hare Krishna movement, but he drifted away and eventually wound up in the military. And so he went to Iraq, that first invasion of Iraq, American soldiers did. It was called Desert Storm. So he was one of the members of Desert Storm. And he was out late at night in one of these Humvees doing reconnaissance work to see what the enemy is up to. He and another young soldier in the vehicle. And you know, if you've ever been out in the desert, it's nothing but sand. So after some time, literally they fell asleep. Driving over the sand dunes, up and down, late at night, dark night. They fell asleep. And what woke them up was the sound of bombs going off. And because they had been sleeping, they lost track of where they were. They didn't know, is it friendly, you know, bombs going out or enemy bombs coming in? So this kid, when he came back, he said, even after not chanting for many, many years, when the bombs started going off and he woke up, the very first thing he said was, Krishna! So that is a benefit of having a solid foundation. Even though you drifted away from Krishna consciousness for many years, because you had that formative, those formative years as a child of coming to the temple every day and chanting Krishna's name, bowing down in front of deities. In the hour of need, in the hour of danger, his first thought was Krishna. So I am imploring the children, the parents who have children already or about to have children or planning to have children, this is your prime responsibility to give them as much exposure as possible to Krishna consciousness so that they will make progress and you will also make progress. Because if you don't make it out of here, in other words, you don't qualify to go back to Godhead, but your children go back to Godhead, then you're guaranteed. Because it is promised in the scriptures that if you become a devotee and you become a pure devotee, then at least 7 generations forward and 7 generations backward, they will be delivered also. So we should all take this very seriously. And it's a very fun process, the Krishna conscious process, chant. Now we're going to go and eat Krishna prasadam. Very wonderful activity. And then we come back and chant some more and dance some more. Wonderful process. So teach that to the children. Make sure they eat only Krishna prasadam. No Doritos and Cheetos and this kind of stuff. Later on in life, if they discover that, what can you do? But at least in the first... And this is where the India has so much to offer. The Indians, they know every single Indian fast food that you can make. The chidwa and the, they make such wonderful things. Don't give up that tradition, please. Don't just start buying Cheetos and Doritos and the mothers, especially the Indian mothers. Teach your daughters and your sons how to make the wonderful Indian preparations that you make. They have all these little snacks and they last forever without refrigeration. It's amazing. You travel in India and still many villages, they don't have any refrigerator. But they make food that can last for weeks, a month, because they know the art of combining grains with sugar and ghee like that. So please don't lose that. Teach it to your children, and they can pass it on to their children. But, of course, after you make the wonderful chidwa and all that stuff, offer it to Krishna. It becomes Krishna prasadam, which will deliver you, your children, and the whole world. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So let us go and take Krishna prasadam. Hari Bol.